called Honey Centralized Support Services. We are going to be talking about running a better administration to achieve an unqualified audit and obviously to sustain it, fighting fraud and corruption, implementing key ICT projects, improving HR management and development, finalizing Truth and Reconciliation Commission recommendations, and implementation of service charter and related projects, as well as the administration and implementation of FAIA. And insofar as the prescripts on good governance are concerned, one of the three key priorities of the department is to improve accountability by achieving a no audit qualification for the vote, as well as obviously for all other funds that we run. Chair, I must pause here and indicate that the department runs quite a number of funds. We run the President Fund, the CPF, Guardian Fund, CARA Fund, and can't remember the other one. All of these funds, Chair, except for third-party funds, including the vote, are unqualified. The only one fund that we have not managed to get a qualification, an unqualified audit for yet, is CPF, but we can assure this committee that the level of work that we have done, we think we are going to be turning a corner in not too distant future. Currently, the fund is being audited together, obviously, with the vote. And in areas where both the vote and the fund, in some regions, we have already got an indicative feedback, because it's not official yet, that there were no findings, or where they were, there were not too many findings. But obviously, the audit has not finalized, and therefore, we can't speak in any decent detail around that. In addressing the TPF, Chair, forgive me, we call it TPF, so if I can move on those bases. One of the things that we are doing is to look at the new system that we are going to be using for the TPF. It's also to finalize the legislation for TPF in particular, but also finalize legislation in other areas, such as we indicated earlier, such as well as the NPA, insofar as addressing the accountability data or the reporting, if I can put it that way. Then we move to fraud and corruption work. In terms of addressing and mitigating against the risk of fraud and corruption. We are running awareness sessions where we train employees, existing and incoming employees, on all our interventions to fight fraud and corruption. And we believe, Chair, we've done significantly well in this area. We've reduced the incidences of fraud and corruption, at least in terms of the identification rate, quite significantly, and we are hoping to be able to do better in the not so distant future. We are vetting our staff, particularly those in supply chain management, but we are also vetting SMS members. Chair, I must indicate that for the first time this year, 2014-2015 financial year, we've also gone back to those homes where we vetted employees to study the outcomes of that vetting and to question people on what they had declared or not declared, as the case may be. And this is now going to be an ongoing process going forward. I must indicate, Chair, that in the department we have had a very small non-return rate, and non-return rate refers to where employees have not signed their declaration of interest, as it were. Similarly, on performance agreements at SMS level, this is one area where I think in 2010-2011 we had a very poor return rate, and suddenly in the past 2-3 years we've intervened quite aggressively, and we have almost 100% return rate in terms of SMS agreements. demand rather the performance at lower cost level, the master's facilitated the CPF, the trust, sexual offenses, as well as the EFC system. Chair, I must indicate that when the EFC system was introduced some 3 years ago now, we are paying in the master's environment 96% of all guardian fund money is now paid via electronic fund transfer, while 92% or so in the maintenance environment is paid via EFT. Now, this is a lot of money that we are paying people on a daily basis, and so we are very reliant on EFT for us to be able to achieve at the magnitude at which we have been achieving. Later, Chair, I will be able to talk to the exact quantum or the exact amount that we are paying in this form, but at this stage, I just wanted to indicate those systems that are assisting us. In addition, Chair, in dealing with the issues of the integrated criminal justice system, we've developed a number of systems. Just the other day, which was Tuesday last week, we were going through all the systems that have been developed by the IJS board, which systems are enablers of integration, and we are quite comforted that last time we reported to this Honourable House, we said 99 police stations were already connected and were able to deliver dockets on the spot live to 20 courts. We've moved to about 500 police stations that are connected to about 100 courts, and we are improving as we do this work. So this investment, Chair, is the investment that we've been challenged quite significantly by this Honourable House, as well as other people such as National Treasury, on where is this investment going. And now we're beginning to see the return. And that's because we prioritize managing this project, both as a cluster as well as the department. In moving forward with the project. Now, with regard to IT governance, overall in the department and specifically in this area, Chair, we've improved the ICT governance quite significantly. We developed the ICT governance as soon as possible after the PSA has issued the guidelines. So now we have the ICT governance policy framework, we have the charter, we have the relevant committees that assist us in managing the ICT governance firstly, but also we have the relevant committees that assist in the procurement of the ICT equipment in the department. What we have to do and share is that given the fact that we want our department to be one of those departments that is ICT enabled, we had to make a choice on the systems that we want to use in the department to avoid having systems that cannot integrate. And once we have done that, we then gave all those responsibilities to various committees in the department to ensure that we procure along those lines and that we procure support contracts that will work in an aligned kind of environment. And we are very comforted. In fact, I must indicate that a little bit of boasting never killed anybody. So when we introduced our own policy framework, it was adopted by the PSA and it's now being used in government broadly as the ICT framework to use. So at least we have one thing to show for all that investment. On the human resources issues, Chair, the members will recall that I had indicated earlier that our biggest challenge and risk is in the OSD environment. So when we are talking about a vacancy rate of 10%, which we are slightly ahead of right now, I was talking in part because of that. You will see that this kind of feeling of vacancies, there are vacancies that we have not filled, even though we have grown in other areas. And in areas where we have not filled vacancies, in the main, these are areas that are affected by OSD, in particular OSD level 9s and OECD-level 10s. And that is what I was talking about. But also here, critical in this conversation, is the fact that when we are not able to fill positions at a senior level, we are also struggling to retain positions at a senior level because they are paid very low. Some, they are paid a lot less than secretaries, and these are graduates who just do not have sufficient experience. And that is why people do not stay for a very long time in this area. We've improved our management of misconduct cases. Honorable members will recall that in 2010, we were probably at the lowest in terms of managing the misconduct cases. Right now, we've overperformed, as it were, compared to that period and compared to the previous year, and even compared to our target. The reason for that is that we built capacity in the department to deal with investigations, so cases are investigated a lot quicker, which results obviously in the disciplinary processes a lot quicker. We are also, if you look at the second bullet on the slide, which is the cases that are finalized resulting in dismissal, you will see that 60% of those cases have resulted in final warnings, suspensions, and or dismissals. The reason for that is building the capacity of investigating. So our pilot investigation has grown quite significantly, not only in number but also in content. In terms of grievances, Chair, we have probably been one of those departments that has the most grievances. And I explained the last time we spoke about this that some of the grievances come from this whole model of OSD, because the dispensations are different. So you have two different dispensations in one organization, probably even at the same level, and that results in a lot of grievances. Some grievances that are germane to the subject are grievances that relate to performance evaluation. We are improving. Just the other day, I think last week, Friday or so, we met with the Public Service Commission that gave us at least a green light around how we've improved managing our grievances in the past few years, but particularly in the past financial year. We've also improved our training, Chairperson, and the reason why we've improved our training, one is we want to contribute to building a better and a capable state, but also we want to improve the performance of our own organization. Last year, we trained 5,358 officials as against the target of 5,000 that we had for 2013-2014. This year, the target for training is 6,000 people, and we are confident that in core functional areas, we will be able to meet the target. TRC, the reparations themselves are now all but done. The ones that we have not paid, we are not going to be able to pay because those people now cannot be located in spite of all the efforts that we've put in place to ensure that we locate them. The few beneficiaries that had applied, we are considering, but overall I think we are done with the reparation. In terms of assisting victims, Chairperson, both for educational purposes and other purposes, even where the regulations have not come into play, we have started assisting, just using goodwill and connecting them to organizations that can provide them with funding while we are waiting for the regulations to be finalized by the relevant authorities. Similarly, it's the same story with the medical or health regulations. Chair, with regards to the community rehabilitation work, we've done a lot of work in this area. In some areas such as Mamelodi and some areas of Komenin, KZN and the like, we've consulted quite extensively. We are ready now to move to the next step. There are just a few local issues that we want to resolve in the department, in particular with our minister. We haven't had a perfect opportunity to engage him on the progress with the negotiations, community negotiations. And once we have done this, we will be able to take the next step. In terms of the service charter, chairperson, the service charter came into being on about 2012 when it was launched by the minister. And then we said, as the Department of Justice, our main interaction with the people is in maintenance services as well as in guardian fund services. In the main, yes, we do other work, but that's where people come to us, and they are not necessarily in conflict with the law. And we said then, and we continue to say now, we will focus all our energies in ensuring that maintenance services are dealt with quite quickly. So we are developing accredited learning materials to facilitate training to improve the service standards in our court environment. We are also, we've developed service charters, the posters for all courts. Not all courts have received the service charters, but the intention is to distribute service charters to all our courts. So if you do go to a court by chance and you don't see a service charter, please demand it. Because we are supposed to have put them there, and we want to put them there so that we know which courts still have not received them. We do have a register of all courts that have received them, but sometimes people see it and they take it home with, and sometimes managers do not post them when in fact they are supposed to post them. We are translating the charter, as I've indicated, into Braille as well, so that everybody who uses our services can know what services, what turnaround times have we put for ourselves. We do report not only to this Honourable House, but to the President, the Performance and Evaluation and Monitoring Department, which consolidates this work and creates a report out of it. And we have rated quite decently amongst probably the first 10 departments, if not the first 5. In regards to the presidential hotline, Chair, we were a late starter in this area. After the President had announced the hotline, we really didn't have capacity then. We invested a lot of time and a lot of energy in, as well as in terms of our system. We are basically performing according to the standards of the presidential hotline and better. This is one of the areas, Chair, where we can say consistently we have performed according to expectations and better. And each year we are part of the first 10 departments, if not the first 5 departments, that respond to presidential hotline issues. I mean the bragging, I might also indicate, and we remain to be proven wrong by this Honourable House, but we've been having 100% return on parliamentary questions for the past 5 years or so, at least for the past 3 years anyway. And we intend keeping that, because that too we monitor under service that we provide. In terms of customer satisfaction, Chair, one of the things that we want to do in this year is to test through a survey of some sort satisfaction levels of our complainants with the responses that we have provided. And we are hoping to interact with those results and be able to share them. And so far as the implementation of FAIA, I have indicated critical to our negative performance in the previous year and the year before that, arising from the great number of appeals. Other than that, everything else that we are supposed to be doing in FAIA, we are doing now. The previous year, there was a big question whether or not we were training magistrates on Paia, I must indicate that yes, we went there, we did train in part through the Justice College itself and then in part through SAGE much later that year. So we can now assure the Honourable Members that the training has indeed happened. Insofar as the declaration and the content and the compiling of the register of those magistrates that have been trained, that was that requirement, I seem to recall, was amended in terms of the Judicial Amendment Act that was done last year and is no longer going to be a requirement, if my memory serves me correctly. We then move quickly to Program 2, which is Court Services. I started with administration.
Thanks. I hope you forgive me. I was looking at the way we're doing it. We're moving to Program 2, and there's about four programs. There's about 40 other pages. I was just counting the pages now, plus the financials, Chair. I'm just wondering if we'd be able to finish by 5 o'clock, as you had promised, unless the department is able to summarize. Otherwise, my fear is we'll run out of time to engage from our side.
I think your report is clear. If we get hard copies, members can use their own. As I said, if you could just highlight the main things so that we deal with the budget itself.
Thank you, Chairperson. I won't go through each presentation. I will then say this is the last slide on Program 2 that I'm going to look at. Under Program 2, Chair, I will say that all the areas that are covered there, which is case finalization as well as service delivery, access to justice, protection of vulnerable groups, as well as constitutional advocacy, all of that work is going on in the department. And we are reporting on it on a quarterly basis. We have systems that enable us to tell whether we are on course or not. I have already indicated that we are improving performance of the family advocates and we will be adjusting their targets as such. The only thing that perhaps I would like to speak to is the establishment of the small claim court. We are on track. We are now on slide 72. We are on track in establishing the small claims court, and we had said we wanted to establish 100. We wanted to establish 10 small claims courts within the first 100 days of this establishment, and that we are on track on doing that. Chairperson, I won't speak about the cost necessarily at this stage. The construction process, maybe we'll pick that up when we do the budget, so I will cut that very quickly. We've covered all of that anyway. Participatory democracy, I'd like to speak to this. This is a small program. Well, not a small program. It's a program that we have not spoken about. One of our responsibilities is to ensure that we educate people about the Constitution and about their rights. And this is the project that we are doing through the Foundation for Human Rights. We look at educating people who are South African and those who are not South African but find themselves in South Africa. We then move here to Program 3, which is a program on the state legal services. State legal services, for the benefit of this Honourable House, include master services under the Chief Master, the litigation and legal services under state attorney as well as the department, and then it includes advisory services through the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor, and then finally legislative development. I've spoken about these. The only one thing that I'd like to speak to there is a system called MOVIT. If you go to any master's office tomorrow or the following day and you want to lodge a claim, runs completely electronic in some environments, especially in the courts, in the master's office in Nelspruit. But all the work that we started doing towards the end of last year is now run completely paperless. The only work that we are still doing using files is the work that we did prior to, let's say, prior to September last year. On litigation services, this, please allow me to spend a bit of time because this is where I spoke about transformation of state legal services. Even though we are not doing well, we have been able to allocate briefs in consistent with the targets that we had given ourselves. We had said in 2013-2014 financial year we will give briefs 75% to the previously disadvantaged individuals, and obviously this remains to be confirmed by the Auditor General, but we believe that we have been able to do that. However, what we now are struggling with is the biggest challenge yet, is to ensure that there is quality in the services that we receive from the state attorney and those that are briefed by the state attorney, and we are paying a good rent for our money. The Chief State Law Advisor's work, perhaps other than focusing on the translations, the rest of the work is there for honourable members to read. We are going to be doing a number of pieces of bills through this honourable house. The one that we are extremely excited about is the Maintenance Amendment Act. It's going to bring enormous discussions in this honourable house. The rest of the bills that are standing there, I honestly don't believe that we need to discuss in any significant detail. We've done a number of rules, and we're going to continue doing rules, but the most critical rules that were passed late last year are rules relating to court-annexed mediation. And those are the rules that we will start implementing this year towards the end of the year. Then we move to auxiliary services very quickly, and this we still have to find the right name for that program. For now, though, allow us to call it auxiliary services. This is where we've introduced the integrated justice system as part of this program. Prior to this, it was this is where we used to put programs such as legal aid and the like in this area. I have already spoken in the main about criminal justice review projects. Safe to say, these are the key projects that we'll be pursuing in the next 5 years and starting this current year. The establishment of a single person identifier across the criminal justice system, the integrated criminal justice performance information dashboard. We are going to start with 9 KPIs in 2014-15, but ultimately in 5 years we should have 28 KPIs. We will integrate with our other departments through a case-related integration system. We will develop and roll out personal identification verification information, which is called PIVA, and we'll establish a single data store, which is already in place, but it's now to share statistics through that data store. I will not speak to the modernization because I had already indicated that we have connected so many courts, as you can see, to so many police stations. So that is already spoken about. Similarly, this slide, I've just covered some details there. Chair. So in so far, insofar as this slide, which is slide 101, what we envisage will ultimately assist us going forward is a lot of development in terms of the criminal justice system. The reason why I'm emphasizing this is because honorable members would know that we have invested about at least 2 billion rand into this project over the years, obviously, not in 1 year. And honourable members were asking, what have you spent this money on and what are you going to continue to spend? We have now developed a whole plan on each department doing each work, and all of that is managed in the Department of Justice. And it's important that if honorable members were to visit other departments other than ourselves, could also check with them what is the level of performance in their area. Moving closer to a conclusion, I have indicated that we have aligned our annual performance plan to the NDP for 2014-2015. We do believe that we can see the horizon of 2030 if we take it in bite-sized chunks of a year each and 5 years if we look at the NCSS. We will continue to deliver on our legislative mandate as well as other policy mandates that we have. The key big projects that we'll be implementing, obviously, will be finalizing the transformation of the state attorney, or maybe starting the transformation of the state attorney. We'll be building capacity and systems in the department, and we'll also ensure discipline within the department and continue to fight fraud and corruption. Chair, at this point, I do think that I will retire and allow the next presentation on budget quickly, Chair, if you allow us. Thank you. Ms. Rousseau will take the next presentation, Chair. Thank you.
Engineering
of processes in the Moses office and the Guardian Fund that allowed us to deliver a more extended service to more people and still save in inflation and budget increase. And then there's also the, just to mention, the DG already talked about it, the re-engineering of our processes and the achievements we had in that regard. We obviously, the DG also mentioned that we are committed to be accountable, to be more disciplined, and that we obviously support the infrastructure project management because of the challenges we experience ourselves in terms of infrastructure. We have tried in this slide to put money to the NDP. But I want to just indicate that we need to be careful. This is this money we are put here, the figures, are figures you can directly link to these activities. There's also indirect linkages. Everybody, there's more than one person working on something, but in this instance, we are talking about goods and service spending and not all salaries and also people that's not, that works for these but have not been given a duty to lead in this instance. So in terms of strengthening the judicial governance and the rule of law, just on ISM and the ISM and the CJS and IJS, you can see that we've almost spent 8 million rand. On improving access to justice and also the vulnerable groups, you can see that we've spent on just on sexual offences 11 million, and on the Child Justice Act, Insurance Act 2.9 million and 3.3. I think that was also in the DG presentation. In our alignment to the contribution to broad-based black economic empowerment, 80% of value of our spending on goods and services are spent on level 1 to 4 service providers. In terms of building a corruption-free society, our contribution just in terms of managing the risk in our own department, you can see the 63 million for 2013-14. The DG spoke about our commitment to building a capable state. And obviously, therefore, we are very much, we are trying to align all our policies, our processes, resources, and our technology and data to get an aligned strategy and so that we can achieve more. You would have seen, and you, we don't want to preempt our outcomes this year, but we have improved our people and performance measurement processes. And this led to already to improved audit outcomes, which the DG spoke about, whereby we are hoping to achieve the same again. Maybe just an indication here is that 5 years ago in the Eastern Cape, we had about 59 negative findings during an audit. This year, they have had a clean audit in that environment. So that just shows over the past 5 years, improvement we've had in improving our governance. This slide you also had before, I think the challenge there is clear, our capital under expenditure, on capital and also on the IJS project is our main concern, the 347 million on capital expenditure and 120 million on IJS. The reason therefore has been discussed, so I'll skip this slide to be a bit quicker. Maybe just to say on the IJS system, our understanding was directly related to the disaster recovery site and the network upgrade. And the challenges we experienced in both instances is that they are implementing agencies. Public Works in Capital Works must implement for us, and in terms of IJS, CETA must implement for us. So we experience delays in both instances in approving and specifications, in delays in evaluation of the bids, and also in the adjudication process. strategies we've implemented to try to address this is that we have met at project management level, at CFO level, at accounting level, and also at ministerial level. And we are continuously in communication, and we also have done all the formal correspondence, as well as escalating this to National Treasury and to the Cabinet. In terms of our, these were just a few figures that you had also in advance, just giving you some idea of our achievement. I think something that we're very proud of, although you can see firstly once again the capital, the under expenditure rate. You can also see the green figures, the 74% and the 30% is how we've improved our debtors at year end. And this has been from 492 debtors paid after 30 days to move that to 8.8 million is really something that we are very proud of. I think about 3 million of this relates to the Office of the Chief Justice. So when they are transferred, we're looking forward to even having a lower figure. The cost drivers, what's important here is to note the increases that we've experienced in the expenditure on building leases, on electricity and water, and also on security services. Although security services was a 6% increase, you would know that in the sector, the security guards, their salaries increased by 8 to 10% in the past few years. It varies between those figures. So for us to only have a 6% growth, you can see that we've been very strict on our security services, hence the DG's comment that we are under pressure on security management. Also, you would remember that our budget increases have been in accordance with inflation. There you can see the impact of the inflationary increases in electricity and water. That has also had an effect on us. And leases, the challenge with leases is that because we are struggling to get our buildings built, we are actually need to rent. We don't have an alternative. And this is the challenge that our lease increases. You can see the growth there is 19%. You can also excuse the spelling mistake, that's psychological evaluation. There you can see our cost drivers more directly related to legal services, and that is our, in court cases, the psychological evaluation, it says a 20% annual average growth, and transcription fees 14%. Once again, you are well aware that our increases are inflationarily related, so that is no news. This slide just indicates how the pie is shared amongst the various programs, so you can see that 15 or 11% goes to administration, 31% to court services, 3% goes to the Office of the Chief Justice, state legal services gets 5%, the NPA takes 18% of the pie, and auxiliary services, which you know is all the agencies plus IJS, is 17%, and direct charges is the judges and magistrates' salaries. That's 15% of the pie. So this is how the total budget is shared. Then I'm going to slide four just so that we can have a visual. You did have the figures before, so just to look at the visual graph. You can see that court services grew quite a lot, and you can see also that state legal services stayed very at the base level for about 5 years with limited increases, and that's also the reason why there is challenges in state legal services that we are trying to rectify. When we look at what we spend our money on, you would see that if we include the magistrates and the judges' salaries, our compensation bill is 57% of the budget. which I believe is actually good if you consider that we are service departments, people deliver services to, it's not some buy and sell type of service, so this is actually very good. Our goods and services, we spend about 18% of the budget on, our property management 2%, transfers to agencies 12%, IJS and CJS and software, that's sort of our ICT is 3%, buildings 5% and machinery and equipment 3% of the budget. On this slide you can see that because we are a services organization, that most of our money goes towards compensation, and you can also see the impact of OSD in the year between 12-13 and 13-14. You can see there's a bit of a high increase there. That was implementation of OSD. In program one, if you can see that most, in terms of our administration costs, 53% of it goes towards office accommodation, which includes leases. So this actually shows our challenge relating to the spending on that, and the cost of leasing rather than owning. In port services, you can see that 62.8% of the budget goes to lower courts. It's interesting, I think, about that we spend on average about 8.8 million on a lower court and 28.8 million on a high court. So this, although it seems as if most of our money goes towards lower courts, you can see that we spend quite much less on a lower court than a high court. State legal services, program three, there you can see that 44% of that pie goes to the master's office, 7% to the state legal state law advisors, 6% to the constitutional development, and 36% to litigation and legal services, and in law reform is 7%. Auxiliary services, 8% of that pie goes to Legal Aid South Africa. When we talk about facility management, 41% of the budget has been set aside for capital works. Although we are concerned about our spending on capital works, you would understand that we are very much reliant on DPW, as we have indicated. And at this stage, the concern is that we've only spent 5% of the budget up to this stage. So we are in consultation with them to see how we can change this and how we can address that. But the challenge is that although they are implementing activities to do a strategic turnaround, the impact thereof, if it doesn't happen quickly, it impacts on our spending. And this is of great concern to us. And yeah, that's about all I can say on that. The transfer to the Office of the Chief Justice, you can see that that is just for the Constitutional Court, the Supreme Court of Appeal, the High Court and Specialized Court. This is about 500 million, and that relates then to all the costs except for obviously the remuneration of judges and magistrates, or judges in this case. Spending pressures, it was mentioned in the DG's presentation. I've just tried to summarize it that our challenge is the cost of additional accommodation and leasing costs due to the fact that we need to extend leases and we are very much reliant on the buildings we occupy whilst we wait for buildings to be obtained for us, or whether it's being built or whether we try to buy it. The personnel establishment expansion, there's very much challenges in that regard, which the DG spoke adequately about. Also the OSD
And then obviously we also, the funding for commission is something that we don't budget for specifically. That's usually addressed in the adjustment budget. Other spending pressures relate to the implementation and rollout of the cost of legislation. Security and risk management are already mentioned, and access to justice, that is the norm. We didn't put money towards it because our strategy is really to implement as far as possible, and it is to every year review and see how we can do things differently and achieve this. But should you want figures, obviously we can do the calculations and provide them to you. It's just that in the current economic climate, we don't expect to get more money. Thank you.
PGG's got the end of the presentation. Thank you very much. I was beginning to suspect that you over-prepared so that you just tell your story and go before we talk. But thank you for very good submissions, very clear. I think that will make the discussion easy to us. Honorable Schwartz, Honorable Horn, Honorable Bonga, Honorable Mutabu, Honorable Majake, Honorable Maila, Honorable Smith, Honorable Breitenberg.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, DG, and your team for a very, very comprehensive report. We appreciate that. We're working through a lot of issues that you have raised. Obviously, there's a myriad of issues, as you know, and we'll try to, Chair, with your permission, I'd like to engage with a few issues. First, again, to appreciate the work that you are doing from your perspective, from justice. With your unqualified audit previously, we hope that you will get another unqualified audit again. That is really exceptional from the history that we've come from qualified audits previously. That is commendable. The issue that I'd like to, of course, focus on is the issue of the third-party funds. And I would like to just remind you of the previous, so that we are, whilst this is a new committee, clearly we need to monitor it on an ongoing basis. And on 5 November, where we gave our BVR report, and where it states there that we were told at our 2012 budget hearings that annual financial statements were prepared for 11-12 year, but were held back awaiting Auditor General's findings, and they were submitted for 2010-11. These were obtained, and the 2011 and 2012-13 statements have been submitted to auditing since. So we just need to know specifically where are those financial statements for the third-party funds. We also then, obviously that is the one area where you had a disclaimer a number of years ago, and we appreciate the enormity of the task. But the years are now going past, and every year we say, let's go back to 2011 financial years. We need to start seeing significant progress, and I think Mr. Johnson's not here, and he gave us the undertaking, he resigned, which we don't expect. I know he's now working full time on third party, so we're looking forward to the stage where we can file financial statements and get unqualified statements for the third party funds. And we need to monitor that and assist you as much as possible from our side on that. That's the one glaring issue. You've explained as well the second issue relating to the underspending of the capital budget. We raised that with the Minister. We believe we need to assist you more as a department because this is an ongoing problem. When we visited the South Gauteng Court, it's just delays that are beyond your control, and it reflects very negatively because when we go to National Treasury to plead for more money for you, they say, but you haven't spent your previous money. So it's beyond your control, and Chairman, we've already raised that with the Minister, we need to raise this again in the debate. That the minister needs to raise this at ministerial level, and as we've already suggested, that we need to raise it on a portfolio committee level with Public Works Portfolio Committee, and to see to what degree is there a turnaround strategy there that will assist the Department of Justice. The third issue that I quickly want to touch on is the funding from the commissions of inquiry, which are unfunded mandates. And I heard the CFO say to the effect that it's addressed in the adjustment appropriation, but is that sufficient? Was there not a provision that the presidential fund also comes to assist you at some stage? And I need some clarity on that. And then, of course, my bugbear always is the state attorney's office and my concerns about the state attorney's office. A number of concerns that have been expressed by courts recently. Last year, you gave us the undertaking that there were urgent interventions and we passed the legislation. But my concern is, again, the Constitutional Court came out now with, you saw what they said about the one attorney that failed to diarise a court case with significant implications in the Constitutional Court. Now, there seems to be a systemic problem there that we need to address. If you look at the number of cases that have been successfully concluded, according to your graph, 29%. 29%. That is a serious indictment. You've got 71% of cases that are enrolled. That's not cases that have been settled. Cases that are enrolled have been lost by the state, where you've not only got to pay your own advocates, but you've got to pay the costs on the other side. So this is something we need to, I don't know what your performance will be for this year. We obviously it's unaudited yet, but that is a serious red flag. And we appreciate that you are engaging in a whole transformation of the state attorney and that, but it's obviously an issue that is costing millions of rands. Could I then ask, when we act as the state attorney, when the department acts for other departments, you remember me raising the issue of recovery and advocacy fees. How is that progressing? When you act for the Department of Police and you pay their fees, I understand that there's an overdraft facility. There's nothing in the budget for that. You run an overdraft facility that's not budgeted for, and then you recover those costs from the police or whoever you act for. Is that operating correctly? And where does that fit into the financial statements? So, Chair, those are one or two issues that I'd like to raise with your commission. Thank you, Chair.
Well, I will start.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will not belabor the issues regarding the DPW and the state attorney. I think the Honourable Swart has addressed that sufficiently. But in addition, I have two other issues I wanted to raise. The one firstly is regarding on slide 20, there was a mention that the department will embark on a process to establish clear criteria for the appointment of judges with the emphasis on the candidate's progressive credentials and transformatory judicial philosophy and expertise. Chair, I just want to engage the department that, and my point of view is that in our constitution, we as a matter of fact already have the criteria set out for judges when they have to be scrutinized by the JEC. Our constitution has founding values. Our constitution very clearly and passionately talk about the country we want to be and the role of the judiciary in transforming society to get us to where we want to be as a society. And now I want to get to the point that whilst our constitution also talk about the separation of powers and the independence of the judiciary, I think to embark on a process where we want to tell the JSC, in addition to the constitution, there's other criteria or we want to take to task in depth about philosophy and so on for these candidates. Is bordering on maybe encroaching on the principle of separation. transformation of the insolvency practice in South Africa. And I've had a look at the insolvency policy. And whilst there's talk, and with good reason here, that we are looking at transforming the insolvency practice with regards to race, I think this is also ample opportunity to transform the insolvency practice in South Africa in totality. Because the transformation, once again, which our constitution envisaged, does obviously boil down to race to a large extent and gender, but it also boils down to the way we practice law. And I think that sort of, Chair, echoes to a large extent other comments already being made in with regards to other submissions, that we want to transform the legal system. And what I want to get to is that at this stage, we are sitting with a situation that there is no ombudsman or no independent body regulating the actions of liquidators and curators in South Africa. We have a situation where the master of the High Court appoint these people and is also tasked, I don't want to say informally, but at least not in a very strict way, with regulating the insolvency practice. And the strange thing is, and I think other members can also testify possibly to that, that since I've taken up office here, about half of the complaints I receive from the public, because I'm on the Justice Portfolio Committee, is complaints against curators and liquidators. So maybe that's also something we as a committee can look into in future, but obviously once, as the department is indicating that they want to transform insolvency practice, that is something I believe they should also look into. They're not strictly only in terms of race. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Hahn.
Amendments possibly, because you see the cigarette boards is no longer briefing the rural private attorneys. They're now doing these things in-house. We may have to investigate the situation where these briefs are given in the main to do these rural attorneys that operate in the sector, but you need to legislate it. You need to generally put it into a legislation. Because what I have seen, the delays in the state attorney's office is very high, such that departments in the main are no longer complying with the State Attorney's Act. They do a lot of private briefs and so on because of the delays that happen. So we may have to look at that. So indeed, in terms of the separation of powers, Chair, we do have a good story to tell that we are among the very few countries in Africa that can clearly distinguish the role of the executive, the legislature, and the judiciary. We really need to commend ourselves and the ruling party. And the issue of the small claims court. You see the cost of living, honorable chair, is high, and the small claims court can deal with certain issues up to a particular amount. And this amount, I think, it has got to be so trivial that it's too small. Because what we have seen, a lot of money is being exchanged even in the location. So we may have to look at the situation where we increase this amount. Because the last time, I think it was 7,000, so we may have to increase it. Maybe up to 100,000, because what we're seeing is this 100,000 is no longer a big money as it was, because the rand is going down and up every time, so the money loses and gains value. So, because people don't have money to can litigate, so the small claims court can assist a lot in terms of dealing with these issues, because I see it sits afternoons. So I think it's very convenient for people to go to work and still go to court in the afternoon. And then the issue of these transfers, we spoke about transfers to this legal aid board, public protector, and so on. I think one of them came to this committee, spoke about wanting to. They raised an issue that they are underfunded. They are highly underfunded to an extent that they wanted to get donor funding. You see? Now, the problem that I have with this donor funding is that these institutions must not be too independent to an extent that they themselves are able to get to agree with some donors from other countries and so on, because there must be that central role played by the department. Before we come in ourselves as parliament, but the department, because it's the one that does transfers, must be able to play a particular role. Because they must not be over-exaggerate their independence, also in terms of their existence, whilst there is the department, there is the executive, there is parliament, and so on and so forth. So that may be very, very important, so that not anyone else just goes and get money, because we won't know when somebody is now an agent of a specific somebody who's else. So that would be very important. That management is important. And the issue of the briefs, I think the briefs to the PTIs, I think this is a very important point. I think Chairperson will be interested to get the real tangibles in terms of, because we need to see some radical transformation in terms of this one, because maybe if you get to details, how many black lawyers, because even these PTIs, I think the ones who get into the PTIs, there are categories there. There are those that are in the rural, there are those that are in the town and so on. So we need to check them, because we need to rebuild to build this thank black lawyers in particular, Chair. And they are if around the OST, okay, before OST, I think I'm quite impressed that we're dealing with the issue of boundaries. Because that issue, I think, we may have to be briefed as the committee chair in terms of how to. It must be fast tracked because it does create problems for. It does create problems for the access to justice itself, and it gives some confusion, particularly in the most rural areas from where we some of us come from. OST, I think, is not properly. There's a missing link in this. I don't know whether it's a scheme or what, but there is quite a missing link in terms of its application. Because, you know, one, Chair, how do you differentiate? The other one is a technician, it's at level 10, for instance. The other one is maybe it's a technician with more years, but for one reason or another, the other one is at the senior level, the other one is at the junior level. So this OST applies to this one, not to this one. And it creates some disparities in terms of its own application. So we need to look at it with a very close eye for purposes of trying to of improving. I have not yet a lot, Chair, on the issue of sheriffs. Yes. The sheriffs. And the transformation thereof, but I can stop here so as to allow others will come through. Arrangements from colleagues. I don't have a problem.
What do you by allowing you to go and have a cup of coffee, and the others will follow it?
All right.
Yeah, not all of us should go at the same time.
Was really appreciated. And may I be maybe a bit sound controversial? How far are you with the traditional costing, if I may ask? Thank you, Chair.
Don't have to answer all questions exhaustively. You can send us 10 responses by Friday because some statistics that they require may not have been. Can we get a manager?
Thank you, Chief. Just to say thank you to the DG for the presentation. And to continue to applaud you for the unqualified audit that you proposed in the 2012-2013 financial year, and hope that the 2013-14 the Auditor General is actually busy with will manage to elicit the same results. I've actually been looking at this audit opinion history. Your previous audit opinion history looks good, and I hope we will still continue to have the same type of audit opinion history, except the fact that it was just the South African Human Rights Commission that was problematic. And in terms of your presentation, it's good to realize that you are now making a saving on consultants, travel and subsistence. It's very good. The one complaint that we've had since we started having the presentation was that, you know, when you look at the estimates, they keep on rocketing. But I can see yours are actually almost trying to get down it. I'm sure with time, you will actually have really much lower amounts of money that you'd actually want us to approve. Because for now, there's also so much of capital expenditure. And once all of that becomes a situation where all of that is done, we will then manage to get the allocation much lower. And of course, we will still continue to advocate for our own building instead of the big leases that you've got, because they actually consume a lot of money. I would like to actually just reiterate what Honorable Swart has indicated in terms of that participant audit. That is very important. Please do make a follow-up for the upcoming stage where we get a full report. Somehow it looks like the duplication between Justice College and SAGE. Well, SAGE was established to get rid of Justice College, because when you look at the fact that now you're going to actually have all the logistical arrangements for Justice College, that's not really making it extensive. Just indicate what the plan is in that regard. And also, in terms of the judges, do you have an idea of how many retired judges we've got? And how the amount of money that is spent on retired judges? Just information that I really want to have. I'm happy you're actually also looking at maintenance, but like we've indicated in the past, there's really need to step up systems. Though the report itself is not exhaustive in terms of traces, in terms of the personnel attitude, remember we were looking at people complaining about, and then and the quantum, how you determine the quantum, because there has been complaints around the quantum, and whether you continue to attach assets in non-payment areas. And what do you do with unclaimed maintenance funds? I really want to have an idea of what happens in that regard. And then with the sexual offences register, there is also another register in social development. How far are you with the process of merging the two? Also one concern is the low success they really work in terms of helping South African society to transform. Please comment about it along those lines, because at the end of the day, we understand our history as a country. We understand where we want to take this country, the vision of this country. It's what we are doing on a daily basis, assisting us to really help transform the South African society. My other concern is with regards to the fact that it's called Seja from EU, that's going to actually be given out through the Foundation for Human Rights. It's something that's going to, it's called the Strategic Framework for Socioeconomic Justice. And you see, my why is there is that we have these programs that are about access to justice. Basically continue to promote us ratifying conventions and things, but like we said previously, we do this in the context of understanding the extent to which the country can really afford this. It's really nice to keep on ratifying all of these conventions and treaties, but they have a financial implication when it comes to the obligations for the country. The example would be the concept, the court judgment of the child's right to shelter. And indeed, as a country, we had actually ratified that convention. But then, at the same time, are we in the position to really provide all the South African children shelter? And what I'm saying is that as we continue with all of these processes, that would indeed be processes that are around access to justice. We should be cognizant of the fact that they have a financial implication. And this is why even very rich countries like the United States are going to find that there are certain conventions that they haven't really ratified. And they haven't ratified based just on the fact that the country actually sits with the financial implication in terms of approving such conventions. And also, can you comment about the preparations in terms of the appointment of the information regulator? Thank you, Chair. Also, just one last thing. It's the point that Honorable Bongo wanted to raise, but she said, hey, maybe it's too much. I just want to mention it because I think it's important around small claims costs. The whole issue of the sheriffs and the location of the sheriffs, and also in that area, I think you also need transformation so that you actually allow broader participation. And this do-it-yourself approach to small claims courts where people come and see what your complaints and they have to be given forms for do this and that for yourself, that needs to be evaluated because South Africans are not a homogeneous group. There will be those who will be given those forms to go and have to do it themselves, and they will manage to do it and do it successfully on their own. There will be those who are going to find that it then becomes impossible to carry out the process because of the fact that they do not have the capacity to do so. Thank you. Thank you, Chief.
Thanks, Chairperson. And thanks, DG and your team, for a comprehensive report. On the issue of aligning ministerial boundaries with municipal boundaries, I want to check if the department is taking on board other departments, for an example, the Department of Police. Because if the boundaries of policing are not aligned to these other boundaries, then we'll still be sitting with a problem. And DG, you indicated that in 2013, the department conducted advanced training for women lawyers in private practice. It is my belief that that training was informed by observations made by the department. I want to check what those observations were, and after the training, what observations are you making in particular to those women lawyers in terms of their contribution to the judicial system in the country? And
unless we do that also with justice, the bigger problems that we're facing, you're not building the prisons, therefore access to justice is denied. You are having to increase your lease. There's no budget for that lease because you have to reprioritize to fix up the lease. The president speaks about job creation in terms of infrastructure build and economic growth. So all those things share. I think we can't lament about DPW or even CETA. What I do think is that you guys must embark on ensuring you finalize the service level agreement as soon as possible, because that's what we did with correctional services just last year, and it seemed to have resolved or at least focused them on resolving the problems here. So that's a proposal that I think we need to put in terms of the infrastructure build. And then just on the last one, Chair, I'm not sure when we said, I think we said 8 million. We're talking about creditors of small business. I'm not sure if you're saying 8 million individuals or 8 million rand in terms of over 30 days. You know, the President has raised this thing in 3 or 4 states of the nation. He raised it again today. I mean, this year. And it's again part of our transformation. So I would want you to explain to us, why is it not possible to pay every small debtor within 30 days? Because we are setting the precedent up. Thanks, Shepherd.
Congratulating the team on a very comprehensive report and a very well-prepared report. Dr. De Beer did a great job at the APA, and I see he's doing a great job at that. Largely, my issues on insolvency practitioners are covered by my colleague, Mr. Horn, so I won't go into those matters. I have a particular concern with the delays in the finalization of the Limpopo and Mpumalanga High Court. Just give a little more detail on how far those projects actually are, and also with the South Gauteng High Court, which is really just taking years and years to finalise. And it's still, if you go there today, it's still the access is extremely difficult for everybody. So if you could just give a little more detail on what the most pressing problems there are, and if there's anything that we can do to assist to move it along. And then you have a very cursory mention of the backlog projects and backlog cases. But having come from a prosecuting background, I'm aware of the problems caused by backlog cases. If you could just perhaps give a little more detail as to how that's being managed and is any dent in fact being made in dealing with backlog cases. Some of them, you know, get really just so old that it becomes impossible to deal with. So just a little more detail in that area. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you in trying to frustrate the 7th Land
the other one, now that there are two departments, one department now with correction services, it used to be a problem, for example, regarding sentence mark, the judgment, to be, I was going to suggest that you introduce something like when somebody is going to prison, you must go with the judgment, copy of the judgment, and the copy of the sentence, so that now when they do the sentence plan in prison, they're able to know what type of a person that one was. It may assist. I was just suggesting if you were able to put that. Coupled with that, I just wanted to find out, I noticed that you only give one proveritor in the whole country for transcription. And I was wondering for a long time, I mean, right through, who is this veritas and why is he having all the money from the Department of Justice? I want to come to the question of alignment of municipal boundaries to municipal, court boundaries to municipal boundaries. I'm not sure if this is the correct thing. I think that if you say the nearest court to the person, rather than the same municipal boundaries, you find that these colonial boundaries were made such that somebody may travel about 60 kilometers before he goes to his town, passing another court, going to another. I think you need to check from district to district and check whether it is, if you say a court nearer to that person is much better than say in that particular district. I want to congratulate you again for reducing the default judgments against the state. I know that is a pain. I'm very passionate about the question of justice. I know very well, it's known by everybody, that when somebody, more especially with the Africans, being dragged into a foreign court, and the system that is used there is foreign. You found that you guilty or not, I mean, it's foreign to our way of love, doing things. And yet, worst of it all is done in English. I'm not going to talk about reformation, but I think that the chairman is better placed to do that. And I was requested that, can you make it compulsory that all the court proceedings are done in the African language, in the rural areas, in the areas. Because that's like saying all of them be done so that the court interprets for the record, not the other way around. A policeman would write something, a statement in English which he doesn't know. From that on, from the beginning, the whole case is twisted, and the person is disadvantaged as a result of that. I request that you make it compulsory for them. Secondly, the service charter, I think my colleague has already said that. I've seen so many be written everywhere. I don't think that even staff members read that, let alone, I mean, I'm not saying that, I just be honest, very few people do read those things. But if you write them in the languages of those people, I'm sure some people will read them and, will understand that they are right in that manner. The other point I wanted to ask, we have in the High Court for urgent matters, urgent applications, to get a judge even at midnight. How about getting the magistrate after hours? Is that possible?
it's in litigation.
Yes. I sometimes find certain cases, more especially high profile cases, being handled by people who's, I'm not sure, private lawyer. If so, is it possible to reduce that and then have your own people there, if that is so? Thank you very much. I'm sorry to take your time.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you, DG, for your good work. It just reminds me when Minister Khalele was still new, he actually asked the administration not to make him suffer like his predecessors. So I see you have heeded the call. You didn't make him suffer. And I think the new minister is very lucky that you are really producing good work of unqualified audits. Keep up the good work. I just want to make a very humble request that I think it is essential to make a number of small claims courts in the rural areas and also the master's courts so that there is access. You know, when every day they talk about the cost of living going very high, I just think of those people that it is very difficult for them to access those simple necessary services. So I think the department, in line with transformation, should be prioritizing such people. Lastly, you know, I when I came to this portfolio committee, I didn't understand legal matters, but I fell in love with it in the process, and I really follow up what the Chief Justice is saying all the time. The last I read about him, he was saying that it is very difficult for them to employ the people they want themselves, so that they can actually choose who to employ to do what, so that they can be work can be done efficiently and on time, because they've got a lot of queues of cases. And I think he was addressing a certain meeting, and he was saying, in line with the separation of power, that would be would go a long way to actually address that issue of separation of powers. Can you please be sympathetic to my Chief Justice? I've got a passion for him. And the last one is the issue of women judges. I just want to have a way of encouraging women lawyers to actually give them space to prepare them to be appointable as judges, so that we can actually transform this country. I think women are more than 50%. It's only just logical to have half the judges being women. Thank you.
Rich, I have been following the story about transformation. Did you raise your hand today? Sorry. So,
thank you, Chair. On your slide 35, I think on the last presentation on the budget, auxiliary and associated services, then you have sub-programs and how you allocate. I'm just interested to know why the Office of the Public Protector seems underfunded compared to what they request. The difference is huge they made a statement, if I remember well, I think about 41% of their posts on the structure, which is a ratified structure, are unfunded posts. So how do you presume they proceed with that? My other issue is the buzzword that's been used is transformation of the justice system. In that transformation, I think I'm making a comment, you can respond to it if you want. We are one of the countries that are experiencing very high levels of crime, so clearly something in our justice system as a totality is not making an impact in terms of the mentality of criminals. So in the process of transformation, wouldn't you consider restorative justice, especially in sexually orientated crimes? I think if rapists come to terms with the damage that they do, which is what I often find when I run workshops, which are not even legal workshops, but oftentimes the rapists say, oh, but it's just part of the culture, it's part of growing up. I don't realize that for a woman it doesn't end immediately they shower or go to a doctor. So I think it's something we could look at, especially in terms of sexually orientated crime, including even domestic violence. Then a statement was made that legal aid is developing a system, if I'm quoting you right, that will enable us to see precisely who's causing the backlog in the system. Out of interest, I just want to know, are we saying up to now, we are not really sure who's causing the backlog in the court? And if we know, what is the issue? What's the stickiness about resolving it?
DG, I was saying that I've been listening to this question of transformation over the years, but I really don't know whether transformation here means just restructuring or reorganization of structures. Because if it's not just reorganization of structures, then the whole idea of judicial philosophy, legal philosophy, philosophy of law has to come into the picture. Because you see, South Africa is an African country in the southern tip of the continent. And the majority of the people are indigenous Africans. Now, the values of the majority should be factored into the law and not just be relegated to traditional courts somewhere. Because if there's, in my view, if there's anything that unites us in this country, is this Ubuntu philosophy. It is not tribal, it is not racial, it is not ethnic. So it's a glue that binds us together. Now, if that could be the basis of our philosophy of law, I think that could also even address the backlogs and the overcrowding in the jails. Because if you look at the socio-economic conditions in which our people live, social crimes, social ills are unavoidable. And now if you are going to arrest all those kids for the things that they do in those overcrowded settlements, and then you have got to try them, they want legal representation, you must get lawyers for them, then they get convicted, they go to prison, their children mix with other criminals, they come back, you can't even rehabilitate them. So it's really compounding the problem. Now the question I have is whether we shouldn't learn from history, namely that in the 80s when the apartheid state was rendered unworkable, people created a court system in the townships, borrowing from the traditional courts, and came up with a community justice system, community courts. They could resolve their problems, and there was more safer. There were more safer communities without the state then. Can't we learn from that? In
situation, mainstream it, and it works. Well, it still works. So I thought that when we talk about transformation of the system, we'll look at all those practical things that have happened, but also the fact that you can have a UN convention on the rights of the children, but the African countries come up with the charter on the rights of the African child. It shows that they can see that there are certain things that we take from the West, we bring here, which do not apply here because they are inconsistent with the culture of the majority of Africans. Why don't we also factor this African human rights instruments as part of our transformation of the legal system? On the question of language, I don't see any reason why 20 years after our freedom we should allow a situation where we can't say, if you want to be a lawyer, if you want to go and practice in KZN, at least you must understand Zulu in the same manner that we were made to take Afrikaans, Latin, and as compulsory subjects. Why can't we make an indigenous language a prerequisite for getting a law degree and get to a situation where, as it was suggested, that the court in rural areas is running the African languages and then people translate. These things are possible, and I think when we talk transformation, we should be talking radical transformation. And radical transformation should mean that we must establish, indigenize the law itself. We have to indigenize the law itself. You know, I'm actually very impressed by white farmers. You know, if I go to my area in Limpopo, the white farmers speak better Kilo-Negu language, which is my mother tongue, better than me and our children, which means white people are not incapable of learning African languages. So I think we need to address that situation because we are all Africans and we can be all Africans, and other Africans don't want to be fully African. Maybe that's a political thing that the minister will deal with, but I'm just saying that this transformation must not just be about reorganizing the structures and the boundaries. It must go to the philosophy of the law itself. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair, for giving me the opportunity. Your comments, in fact, reminded me of something I had raised in our midst, that I almost forgot to raise it with the department. We seem to have adopted, maybe it was under a rush, we were becoming a new democracy in 94. If I look at our justice system and what the U.S. is doing, I think we seem to have copied a bit from them. We are a country that relies very much on what is termed high sentencing. And unfortunately, high sentencing just leads a prison community which already are becoming overcrowding. And my worry is that it then leads to what is called privatization of prison, which turns the prison system itself into an industry. So if I have a private prison, it's always good to keep the numbers of prisoners there. In the light of transformation, could we look at that? Because it affects this is written. High sentencing has never been a deterrent for crime. We need to come up with a different system, and I think what the chairperson was alluding to is what started me thinking and reminded
me. We also want to talk to the Department of Basic Education. I'm sure you heard the president saying they were opening a school everywhere, every week. Who built those schools? Certainly not the Department of Public Works. It means there is an
the financial statements are done. We've got the audit outcomes for the 11, 12, 13. They are audited. We have tabled them. Yes, on the 13th of March we did table them. So I can talk, I'm sure, about the outcomes, even though we haven't been called by Umama's most wonderful committee, and we are looking forward to the call up. But having said that, the outcomes were not good, but please remember that these are the statements we did in pretty much 18 months to try and write all the financial statements for CPF, and we are grateful regardless of the outcome. We are now working towards improving the outcome because we now have a baseline to work from. Commissions of Inquiry, the situation is as was reported. The Commissions of Inquiry, we didn't get sufficient adjustment. In fact, it was mostly moving money around in where we had money into funding the commissions. Obviously, we do get some support, but it's not adequate. In relation, particularly the extensions that we have had, they started off with a very definite mandate and they've been extended on end. Capital Works budget is an ongoing debate. Chair and honourable members, I will, in this area, indicate very specifically, as the CFO had indicated, all the engagements in relation to this issue, starting from ourselves as officials, as DGs, as ministers, at their level. The conversation has been ongoing. As we speak, Minister has requested that we prepare conversation and correspondence for him, and we will do that so that we continue this conversation and we can find a solution. State Attorney, in terms of the problem being systemic, indeed the problem is systemic. If there was a bit of time, and maybe whilst I talk, Lebo can CFO can indicate the slide that will tell you how systemic the problem is on the budget. Can you just show that slide where it shows growth in investments or in each of the line areas? Basically, the point we are trying to raise with this slide is to show you visually how we as the department have not invested in the state at hand. If you look at court services, it's going all the way there. If you look at every other service, it's going all the way there. If you look at the state at hand, the line is constant. That yellow line there is that yellow. I'm not very good at colors. That line, the one that looks yellow, is where the state attorney has been. This, you are seeing a snapshot from 2010, 2011, all the way to 2016, 2017. But if you look back, which is the line that you're not seeing, in other words, from 2000 to now, there has been no investment in the state attorney. No wonder the results we are getting are what we are getting. So I accept everything that has been said about the state attorney, but it's something that perhaps in the next 5 years you will start seeing the change, because investment takes time before you start getting people to be innovative and all of those things. So I am not going to answer individual questions on the state attorney as a result, but that graph speaks volumes in terms of how we have chosen to invest. Now, if you look at legal aid as an example, you will remember legal aid, nobody wanted to work for them at some point. Government has to invest consistently. At this stage, legal aid is sitting at about how much? About 1.2 billion or 1.4 billion. Now, that shows you the level of investment. Certainly, you can then see the performance and the improvement in how legal aid is working today. The recoveries of fees of advocates, say I must indicate that we are recovering fees from departments. Departments are paying, especially Home Affairs, paying us very well. There are those departments that are still not paying us, those particularly that were declared under Section 101, either A or B. So to the extent that, no, you're still with that, thanks. To the extent that those departments are not paying, we're not particularly worried, because we know that until they turn around, understand their situation and get out of Section 100, either 1A or 1B, we will not receive our money. But let us the departments are paying. Where does that money go? Unfortunately, we do not keep it in our kitty to offset the shortfalls that we have. That money goes back and pays off that credit that is revolving. So it's not money that gets that comes to us in the end. It just helps us to manage the rent in that account, but it's not an account that we show through our reporting in the manner that is was asked. But I can provide, and I will provide evidence of payments that we are receiving. Criteria on the appointment of judges in line with the separation of powers, we take the point. We are not the ones, if you read that slide, slide 20, it doesn't say we are the ones who set out that, who said there is a need for this criteria. It's the National Development Plan that says so, and we all agree that there is some level of work that must be done. The rest of the answer was provided in part by the chairperson and in part by some of the members, so I do not have to deal with that issue. The point we were raising, however, is that if the National Development says all these things, it means there are certain things that we must do as the department to respond and show that we are complying with the requirements of the National Development Plan as such. So the idea is not to encroach on the independence of the judiciary. Quite to the contrary, the idea is to strengthen the judiciary, let the judiciary run in the manner that it is envisaged to run in terms of the constitution. Transformation of the insolvency sector, we fully agree with that view. Even though we were talking in race terms in terms of the transformation of the insolvency sector, race is not the only area that we are looking at. If you look at the totality of the document, it talks about some of the other interventions that must be done. But other than that, we have policies in the department to improve the work of the liquidation industry, the behavior, all of that. That is the responsibility of the chief master, that is regulated in terms of the law. What we need to do is to just shake it out of the chief master so that we get all of those things happening in practice. I agree to the issue of whether we need to start considering whether an ombuds person is necessary in our environment or not. But all of that will come in the totality of revamping the insolvency legislation and the broader policy environment. Then quickly we move to whether we do our work directly or we work through the state attorney or the private advocates to do cases. We do a combination of both. There are some cases where the state attorney does the work itself, particularly if I were to just give you an example, the Devon office. State attorney, they do most of their court work themselves, but their state attorneys then are under serious capacity limitations, and therefore they do instruct people a lot. And then there are those offices that have serious volumes of work, like the Joburg and the Pretoria offices, and the Cape Town offices. There they outsource work, in other words, brief counsel and other attorneys a lot. Small claims court jurisdiction, sir. At some point it was 7,000. I think it changed in 2010 to 10,000, and yes, indeed, we are considering. But thinking about 100,000 is a bit of an ask, and because it then interferes with a whole range of other jurisdictions of regional courts and all of those things, because those are jurisdictions that are determined in part by value. So it's something that we do it gradually. As we see that people can afford more, we then increase the thing. But it doesn't mean that people cannot sue each other in the small claims, because let's say if they were about 20,000, as long as they agree to let go of the difference and at least pay each other 12,000 or sue each other for 12,000, not the balance. And it does happen a lot under those circumstances. Donor funding is a very sore point, but it's a very useful resource that we are getting and using. Sore point in the sense that we could easily be influenced, so it is alleged. But
point of order. You raise the question
everything is negotiated, not even by the Department of Justice, but it's negotiated centrally by National Treasury. Once it has been negotiated, each of us then get given those opportunities to then talk to those people, but by then they would already have made commitments of how much they would want to give us. And then we are now engaging in specific terms on the particular project that they can fund, and that is how it works. The idea is not for every individual agency to go individually and get its own money and come to South Africa and use that money. That's not how it should work. It doesn't mean it has never happened, but that's how it works. We will provide a real breakdown. We have been providing a real breakdown of a brief to private council. We generally prefer not to give names, because if we give names, then we don't want people to be attacked by other people, because once information is submitted to Parliament, it becomes public property. So we want to protect their identities. But we will provide statistics. The Honourable House can then tell us whether those statistics make sense to them, and we can come and explain the statistics. Redemarcation, I think we have had the Honourable House's concerns on the speed with which the redemarcation processes are going. Let me, however, say this, that we are generally known to be slow on most things. On redemarcation, we have not been slow. The reason why there has been a delay is because it took us a very long time to find each other between ourselves and the sector to finalize the Superior Court Act, which was only approved last year. And now that that Act has been approved, we are now running with the process as was originally anticipated. The OSD applications, I have already indicated. What we will do is we'll be able to provide statistics around the actual number of positions that we cannot fill because of the embargo, and those that that people are just moving in and moving out because of salary level disparities. Indeed, there are disparities, and the disparities are at design level as well as at implementation level, but let me leave that issue there. Transformation of sheriffs, it's a very exciting issue because we were very excited about 2 years ago when we started with that work. We think that we've changed at least significantly the racial profile of the sheriffs, even the services that the sheriffs are providing. But we are the first people to concede that the sheriff's services are not always available wherever they should be available. And the amendment to the Sheriff's Act was, amongst others, intended to give us that opportunity where there are no sheriff's services, so that we can be able to use government officials in those areas to serve those processes to prevent the risk that Honourable Matsaki was speaking to. Firstly, but there was also a question that was raised about their location, where sheriffs are located, and that too is going to be guided very much fundamentally also by the redemarcation processes that we are currently undertaking. The promotion of multilingualism, the right word that I can pronounce, Mr. Malema will deal with, but very quickly, on the service charter, we strive to, and we have printed the service charters in various languages, and depending on the dominant language of the area where the court is, we will provide an English version and a different language version of where that environment is. But you may find that they are not there all the time. And what we are trying to do now is to do a little bit of a survey, and I won't call it an audit, because an audit is a strong word, but an assessment of all our offices where we have these charters. And we can then find the question on the underspend, we have dealt with in the presentation, ma'am, but the only, perhaps if I can clarify, the areas of understanding is in infrastructure, which is capital works, the building of courts and offices. That's one area. The second biggest area, and the area here is about 300 and some odd million in the building of courts. And then it would have been more if Treasury did not allow us to use that money to offset the the money from that allocation, it would have been wise. Secondly, it's in the IT, and it's a specific project that we understand on. It's called the DCRS, which is the Digital Code Recording System. That project we had budgeted for about 110-120 million. That's where COSITA could not deliver that. That is why we understand. And we also have the details which we've provided here. Then the risk management in relation to TPF, absolutely. TPF for us remains one risky project. If one mistake, we can be in big trouble. And so we apply all the risk mitigation interventions that we can lay our hands on, both as people in training and all of that, but also in systems. One of the systems that has been delayed by CETA is also the TPS system, but we will work around it. We still continue to use the system that we've been using. We've strengthened it as much as possible, but it remains extremely vulnerable, and that is why we want a system. Traditional courts bill, JB will speak to, and then savings on consultants, thank you. But we continue to make savings on consultants. But as we make those savings, we build sometimes internal capacity, sometimes systems. It depends on what we are going to use the money on at the time. The ownership of buildings versus ownership leasing, ideally we would wish to have our own buildings. But the time it takes to build a building and the time and the services, the demand for services, is always not balanced, and therefore sometimes we will rent, sometimes while waiting to build. So those are the issues that we deal with. The duplication between Saje and Justice College, there isn't actually a duplication. It sounds like a duplication. Justice College, no, Saje trains only judges and magistrates. And yes, I agree, the setup fees and the administration costs for both training is very high, I agree. But Saje looks after us, Saje looks after the Judiciary, Justice College looks after us. And I said Justice College looks after us, the NPA, to some degree legal aid, and international people that we train in terms of the what agreement. Cost of retired judges, I request that we provide that in writing, because we'll have to go and get that. Maintenance, tracing, we trace, attach future benefits. In the new Maintenance Amendment Act bill, we intend introducing the issues around quantum as well as the issues around attachments and listing of people who do not pay maintenance. That's what we intend introducing, but we haven't, so I haven't said it yet. Sexual offences register, the measures of the two. We've done a lot of work on the ground. The technical gurus are looking at the technical facilities or no, technical facets where the measures can take place in the physical sense. In principle, we agree between ourselves and social development that work must now proceed, and that work is already being undertaken. Low success rates against government, those I have already dealt with. Transformation of judges, that I have already dealt with, at least the chair has dealt with. So we take your leadership chair on the subject. As we do our work, we will factor the guidance we received here in terms of some elements of introducing indigenous experiences which might translate into indigenous laws and be used and diffused as part of the South African jurisprudence and be part of the South African judiciary. So it's something that we will take and put it in our pockets and work on when we go back. And the socio-economic framework for social justice, Chair, those issues, we are going to take them into account when we go back to try and look at how do we structure our work, how do we structure, particularly in relation to our partners, the EU, and other partners, which, by the way, I should have mentioned that it's not just the EU. We have many people that are offering donor support to our work. Where are we with the PPI, the protection of personal information? We've put aside, because it took us a bit of time to have the Protection of Personal Information Act passed. Normally we will put the budget together with that to National Treasury, but we because the time of passing of the legislation and it's coming into effect, the budget would not have been granted. We've had to look at our own internal resources, and we found about 10 million to get the regulator started. But there are a number of other processes that are stipulated in the legislation which must be undertaken before the regulator can be put in place. We have a project plan for the PPI, which we intend discussing with the minister in the coming week. And once it has been agreed to, we will roll it out in the minister just said. Alignment of magisterial districts of that with small claim courts, they are not known in rural areas. I will agree with that. We do talk about them incidentally. We even talk about them in a number of radio shows linked to GCIS, which we believe are community radio stations. But I agree, they are still not known, so we need to do more. Our courts, where those areas are linked to, must do more in terms of that. Would a court work better if we said it must be in the magisterial, that a person must go to the nearest court, or we must define a court? It's better to define a court because you then know the traffic and the volumes that go to that court, rather than we just waking up and going to a court. Because in some instances you'll find that it becomes difficult to pinpoint the total capacity of that court relative to its residents. So we would want to be specific about that. But it's something that it's an innovation that we will continue to consider as we do further redemarcations going forward. The radical transformation of the magisterial boundaries I've dealt with. The only thing that I will say, perhaps in addition to everything that I have already said, is that we have engaged with all departments. In the redemarcation project, we have the regional coordinating committees, the RCCs, in every area that is to be redemarcated, which means they are everywhere. They sit, they consult, the judiciary, the police, the legal aid people, the sheriff, and all of those people. So all of them have been consulted. In some areas, we are more ready than in others. That is accepted. But also because all these consultations have been happening over a period, people change. So new people come in before the project is implemented, and you still have to go back. So there were those real challenges on the ground. But consultation indeed has happened. And I think about last month we had two of the biggest last consultations before the rollout. So we are hoping that the teething problems will be sorted by the time we move. SLA with Public Works, thank you very much for the suggestion. I think now I'm speaking under correction. The SLA is in place, but we need to write it better next time so that we pinpoint non-delivery on either side. So that's what we need to do going forward. Payment in 30 days, we were talking in value. So value came from about 400 and some odd million down to about 8 million. I agree. I'll be the first person to agree that ordinarily we shouldn't have anybody not paid. The 8 million, it's not the people with small businesses. I must emphasize that. The 8 million could be any of our clients except the small businesses. What we try and do is we prioritize the small businesses first, we prioritize everybody, and if we owe, we will leave people to be paid last, being the departments themselves. We pay those last. We start with the small and the reason why you will still find that some people have still not been paid on time. This is one area that we report on a monthly basis. We created a system just to track the payment. As you can see, to move from 400 million down to 8 million is a huge ask over a period of time. But there will always be those areas where sometimes there was a problem, a big problem that once you sit down with people, it is explainable. 3 million of this comes from the Office of the Chief Justice. There are issues that we are trying to deal with, that we are trying, to resolve in terms of day-to-day performance and all of those. Because remember, the Office of the Chief Justice is regulated by the same rules that regulate us, but operate kind of in a slightly different mode than we do. So there are things that, and obviously, as we report on a monthly basis, they probably report on a monthly basis, but don't report to us on a monthly basis. So we only know about these things once they happen. The rest of the money, there are specific reasons why we had not paid on time. Let me clarify this as well, and thank Parliament at this point. The past 2 years, we've been asking Parliament to assist us, and they have, by getting Treasury to be soft on us when we were asking for permission to shift some money to be able to deal with this. We are always underfunded, say, in terms of our rates and taxes. Rates and taxes increase at about 12%. We are funded at about 6%. There is always going to be this shortage. This is the shortage that causes non-payment of service providers, because we have to ensure that this shortage we do not overspend on. And we will have a fuller conversation on a different day, and we will be happy to explain this and give you a presentation on how we are dealing with this. Insolvency practitioner, ma'am, I have dealt with it. Suffice to say that when we are good and ready, and the policy has gone through all the hoops and we've averted all the further interdicts, we'll be happy to come to this honourable house and present. But we are also happy to talk to people offline just to clarify certain things that we have explained. The Mpumalanga and the Limpopo High Court, I have my colleagues to speak to that, as well as South Gauteng, as well as the backlog. Bail issue. May I take the bail issue? I'm passionate about bail. There are various stages where a person can be granted bail. You can get bail on arrest by a police official, or you can get bail once you get into the system. When you get that bail, you are then given someone to come and appear in court on a particular day. So those things must, all those instruments are there for us to use, and we should be using all those instruments. And unfortunately, sometimes we don't always use them. Transcription services, Veritas, I do not know the suppliers. So if it is Veritas, I will go back and find out. I just know that we have suppliers for transcription services. Okay, you said you want to answer everything. Okay, all right. So can I stop? Allow me just two areas. The rest of the questions my colleagues will add. The access, providing access to justice, either in small claims court or any other service. We are now prioritizing in rural areas. What we might want to do is to provide information on where, for instance, these small claims courts are. In Northwest and in Gauteng, we have total coverage of small claims courts, as we have said we were going to have. Now we can increase them in new areas. And then insofar as the master's services, because in other areas we use ICT a lot, in rural areas that's where now our focus is to go and talk to people, because now we will have space as we're able to talk to them. Those are some
On the question of the women judges and whether we are encouraging them to take up positions, I think the issue of appointing women judges, amongst others, there's been an issue of experience and the strategy of the department, and that's why the Director General in her presentation was talking about briefs for PDIs. We want to prioritize women so that as many women lawyers, particularly black women lawyers, are given an opportunity to gather sufficient experience so that they can have a better chance of being appointed as judges by the Judicial Services Commission. We are also concerned, but we are also trying to deal with it through the briefs that we are giving to lawyers. I also just want to address a few issues that were raised. One was a question by Honorable Swart on funding for commissions of inquiry. He asked whether isn't there a provision that the President's Fund should assist. The President's Fund was set up on the basis of the Nation Building and Reconciliation Act that established the PRC and is specific on what that fund can be used for. So we can't, I don't think the law as it says permits us to use the President's Fund for other things other than implementing the recommendations of the GRC.
Previously the department indicated that the presidency as a budget fund, not the president's fund.
Because
the president proclaims the inquiry, surely the funding should come from the presidency and not from the department, because it places pressure on you operationally. You don't know when the president is going to issue a proclamation for a commission of inquiry. So surely that should be an issue that one can change to the National Treasury. When commissions of inquiry are proclaimed by the president, the funding should come from the presidency and not from the Department of Justice.
Sorry, I misunderstood. I thought we were referring to the president.
Yeah, no, it's clarified. Just noting.
The next question on recoveries, on advocate fees from other departments. The information we have is that to date we have recovered 759 million from various departments. The only challenge we have is the departments of health in both Gauteng and Limpopo. That's where we are struggling to get the money that we have spent. The other issue was on OSD.
What is the explanation for their inability to?
These are the departments that struggled with finances and they were put under Section 100, meaning they were under administration because of insufficient resources, particularly financial resources. And that is why until they recover from that state, it will be difficult for them to pay.
Last two questions, Chair. On OSD, the department has already taken an initiative for the review of OSD. We have submitted clear recommendations for the Department of Public Safety and Administration. But in addition, we have approached the governance and administration cluster in which most departments sit. And there has been an agreement that the DPSA will be mandated to approach the General Bargaining Chamber to raise the matter with the union so that the review process could start. And we hope that as soon as there's a concrete outcome on this matter, we will come back to the committee to report. Lastly, on the alignment of boundaries, we have had consultations today on demarcation of boundaries, mainly in Gauteng and the Northwest. Among the stakeholders we have worked with, SAPS is definitely on board. They have participated in all our workshops to date, and we are working together with them to implement this recommendation.
Thanks, Chairperson. I'll just deal with a few. I think the DG has
addition to that, we will be building our own internal capacity, because we do realize that we are also lacking in terms of when we make submissions. You know, part of the delay in South Gauteng is that our own people also keep on making changes to what has been submitted to public works. And every time they say, look, we want this, we want that, it actually delays the, you know, the project. So it's not entirely, you know, on the side of public works, but we've also contributed toward, you know, those delays. So part of increasing our technical capacity in terms of employing, you know, architects, civil engineers, just enough to be able to, you know, get the project going would actually assist us. The other matter raised on maintenance, I think the DG you know, referred to that. We've issued a tender to employ tracers so that we can, you know, follow up on the defaulters. There's also a defaulter strategy that was just published, but the tracers will also assist us to, you know, get hold of the recent beneficiaries. We continue to do adverts on radio and newspapers, but also we're working with Mahot in some of the rural areas, you know, so that they can assist us to actually trace the people. We put notices in the courts, you know, so we've done quite a lot of things to try and get people to come to court and collect the money. And when the money is not collected, it is then given back to the state, but they can actually claim it back. But we want to avoid that process. You know, it's better that people actually get their money rather than try and claim it back. Still on maintenance, we've actually, as a department, identified maintenance as a key area. You will see that it features very dominantly in our strategy. And so we've continued to employ maintenance officers, maintenance investigators, but we've introduced mediation so that we can assist the, you know, create capacity amongst our staff so they can assist the parties to agree. We've done training through Justice College on customer service. We put up signage in some of the courts. We put up guidelines on how to actually apply for maintenance so that it's actually easier. We're translating, you know, some of the documents that we have so that, you know, they're in other African languages, so to Sizulu and so on. The small claims, I think, is, you know, one of the areas where the committee has raised concern. I think we, as the DG said, we must strike a balance that, you know, the attendees actually complain as well, you know, as we increase the amount, they say, look, but we're also eating into, you know, our work as well. But we do realize that, you know, we must make the services accessible. We are looking at complying with the Act in terms of employing what are called legal assistants, so that, you know, the clerks are not just left onto their own. There's a legally qualified person who sits there, who guides them. But in addition to the chairperson, we are working with SASITA, where we have started training some of the clerks as paralegals, you know, so that we continue to improve on the quality and the knowledge of the clerks, so that when people then come to court, you know, they've got a measure of confidence that, you know, the clerks have people that can support them, but they also have a fair understanding of the law. Limpopo, I'm trying to see the dates. We've got the dates as in 20, I can't see it here, Jefferson, but we've got the 20 January 2015, that would be Polokwane, because Polokwane is almost done, Jefferson. And then towards the end of the year, September, October, that would be Mala. The delays that we had in Limpopo, largely it was the citation, you know, and the people that were working there. I think the major delay really that was really caused by public works was really on the start of Mala. There were a lot of problems in just accepting the land, you know, making the appointments and so forth. But we can report that the building has now taken off, and we are keeping our fingers crossed that there will be no strike. So the dates that we are giving you are actually dates for scheduled completion. Thank you.
Honorable members, you can see the DG and the team love their work. We wanted to give them an early off. They are refusing. They want to do their work, and this is commendable. Honorable Mr. Skosana.
the people outside. She works in the parliament in other countries. Permission to leave the actual conducted and they are fixed at a seat under the very clear rules that they change in customs. Once, for the issue of the name of whether it's appropriate to send the name of course, they cut or the people who are over 4,000 back. The rule of the same customers and those are the companies. Because you need driving full marketing practice to gain environment in terms of social economic and shaping value. Now, if you have those kind of values, you must avoid the right hand. So, when the NDP talks about the need for the right hand, they will make a reflection to get there. So that the focus must not be just for the master's degree, first class party, instructors, whatever, then you don't get it. One element is not being over yet.
Because of the previous
respond to the question that I'm just concerned about. You don't have to respond to it, to what I'm saying, but I just need to express the concern when you indicate, Mr. Chibisha, CEO, that women are not ready to become judges. I want that statement in some way to be validated, so that there shouldn't be a situation where women are denied the opportunity or the assumption that there are no women who are ready. Of course, if there are no women who are ready, it's fine, but we need to have a way of validating such utterances. Maybe one other thing that gives the answer is when you're saying that the amount allocated to SAGE is not being utilized, because that's where they're supposed to be prepared for them to be ready to come back. But I'm not trying to answer this, and I don't expect you to give a response now, but I was actually just expressing a concern.
Actually, it's not really a reflection on the women or that suggesting that they are not capable. It's a broader question. If black people, and especially women, are not briefed, where will they get the experience? So these things are linkable. That's why the point of briefs has got to be followed up. And I think there was a request that we even get more details on the briefing system. Because you can see now this department is led by women very efficiently. The office of the Chief Justice, the Secretary General, led us, they're very capable. But the system is barring them from rising as they should, so we must deal with the system. Any other thing?
I just want to say, Chair, it would be good if they could read the speech. It's a long speech by the Chief Justice. You can go to Google and get it, or you can give me your email, I can forward it to you.
Thank you very much, Chair. There were many other questions that we didn't answer, which we've been given permission to not answer, but this one I request to answer. The public protector and her and that office is underfunding. It may very well be that the office is underfunded. I'm not confirming or denying that, but I'm saying what the Office of the Public Protector gets, and we do not interfere with it. We just are a conduit to give them what Treasury would have given us to them. So there's no, we don't adjust their money in any manner or form. They get it as it was allocated to us. That's the only clarification. The rest of the questions, I would personally wish to engage further on the restorative justice, because we have a policy on restorative justice, but we have specifically excluded sexually related offences. Now, I would wish to engage further so that I can understand the position and see if we can enrich our policy in any manner or form. The rest of the questions we'll probably respond to in writing. Thank you. But we have the answers, Chair, if we have time.
You see, the Secretary General in the Office of the Chief Justice promised us yesterday that she will send us today. And here is a letter. She says 19 judges appointed, African female 8, African male 3, white female 4, white male 4, 19. You see, the people are capable, they are efficient. So we have to transform the system so that it doesn't create barriers. Any other honorable?
Maybe it forms part of what you would answer later. The issue of high sentencing, I am passionate about, because it is black youth that is getting criminalized. So it would be interesting to get a written response from you.
Very much. I haven't seen this high level of interest in your work, and even the questions are constructive, and maybe that's why you didn't want to leave, because you feel you are fully supported. Thank you very much.